one of the things that people don't think about is you can catch PTSD in the family. So my father had PTSD, he gave it to my mother and me. So that's called secondary PTSD. So the kids can actually pick it up from their parents.
Hey there, my friend. This is Dr. Anthony Balduzzi, and I want to welcome you back to another episode here on the Fit Father Project and the Fit Mother Project podcast. On today's episode, we're joined by two amazing guest experts, Dr. Eugene Lipov and Jamie Mustard. They are the co-authors of a brand new book, The Invisible Machine, The Startling Truth About Trauma and the Scientific Breakthrough That Can Transform Your Life. And I want to give you a little bit of a preview of this conversation because there's a little bit of scientific background that's going to help you actually understand this. I'm going to define a couple terms and really set the stage for this. So Dr. Eugene Lipov is an anesthesiologist. And over his career, he kind of stumbled upon something that he believes is like really revolutionary. And I tend to agree with him after this conversation that we had. Basically, anesthesiologists use different medicines to tone down the nervous system and oftentimes to alter consciousness for surgery. I know you know this. They found out that you can actually inject a specific anesthetic in the neck and actually tone down the fight or flight aspect of the nervous system that so many of us have. So there is a branch of our nervous system called the autonomic nervous system. It could also be called the automatic nervous system because this is the stuff that just happens automatically. Your heart is constantly beating. Your body is responding to different organs and digestion. This is driven by the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system has two branches, the sympathetic, which is the fight or flight, and the parasympathetic, which is rest and digest. And what Dr. Lipov basically discovered was that people who have trauma, which we often define as when it's really serious as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, actually have a biological mechanism for their trauma. And it should be understood as post-traumatic stress injury. What he figured out is that after there is some kind of overwhelmingly stressful event, there are changes that happen in the brain and actually in some of these sympathetic nerve bundles in the neck that make it so that the whole system is hyperagitated all the time. And that's where people have all sorts of issues, high blood pressure, racing pulse, trouble sleeping, depression, emotional outbursts, a lack of sexual function. These are all tied with this kind of trauma picture. And there's a procedure that Dr. Lipov figured out that is now called dual sympathetic reset procedure, where you basically, he and his trained physicians under him inject into your neck to help reset the nervous system. And it leads to massive emotional breakthroughs. And there's a lot of cases that they go into treating people with sexual trauma. They treat Green Berets, Navy SEALs, basically all the time. And this is the real deal. Like Dr. Lipov has presented this in front of Congress. This was endorsed by Obama at the time when he was in office. So this is really legit stuff. And then our other guest is Jamie Mustard. I said Dr. Jamie Mustard, but he knows a lot about medicine, but really he's an artist and a great communicator and a champion for this work. He benefited personally from this therapy that Dr. Lipov had, and it basically helped him get through some legitimate trauma he had from a very rough upbringing on the streets of LA. And now he's really helping spread this word. And Jamie does just such a beautiful job explaining how this type of reset is so needed in today's society, because so many of us are walking around, not necessarily, well, some of us have like acute trauma that we're still storing in the nervous system, but other of us just have a lot of stress, everyday stress that can still key up this nervous system. And the idea here is that there's a simple therapy through their Stella Centers that you can use to reset. And if you want to learn more, of course, they have their book, which is great. It's The Invisible Machine. There's going to be links in the show notes on that. So I think that's a fair background. There's going to be one other acronym you're going to hear a few times, and that's going to be a stellate ganglion block, SGB. That is the precursor procedure to now what they call it, which is the dual sympathetic reset. It's the same concept. It's just the dual sympathetic reset is the refined version 2.0, if you will, of this stellate ganglion block. So I know there's a lot of acronyms. We're going to get into some science, but I promise you, you stick in this conversation, you're going to get to hear from some world-class experts, which is always cool, but you're also going to get a better understanding of the nervous system, how it works, and specifically how it works in relation to trauma, and how there's certain things that are actually pretty relatively inexpensive and accessible that you can do to really heal. So without further ado, let's get into today's great conversation with Dr. Eugene Lipov and Jamie Mustard. All right, my friends, it's Dr. Anthony Balduzzi, and I want to welcome you back to another episode here on the Fit Father Project and the Fit Mother Project podcast. And I mean it when I say that we've never had an episode quite like this one today, because we're joined by two absolutely fascinating guests, experts in their respective fields. First, we're joined by Dr. Eugene Lipov, who's a complex anesthesiologist who's been called the Einstein of modern anesthesiology. His discovery and innovation, the dual sympathetic reset protocol, has been endorsed by President Obama in 2010 and has roughly an 85 to 90% success rate in reducing the effects of trauma. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about this procedure, but what you're really going to gain is a greater understanding of the nervous system, of trauma, and it's really kind of helping to shift our understanding of all this important stuff. And of course, we're also joined by Jamie Mustard, who's an artist, multimedia consultant, and iconist. His passion is to teach science and the art of obviousness and the economics of attention to help professionals, change agents, artists, and businesses confidently make their messages, brands, and ideas stand out with their desired audiences. And Jamie's also massively accomplished. He's worked with some of the biggest brands, including Nike, Adidas, Intel, Cisco, and he believes that art is a way to amplify and accelerate social change. So I need to ask the elephant in the room question, guys. How did you two come together? I mean, very unique and like amazing backgrounds, respectively. Why did you come together to write this book?
What do you think, Jamie? You can do it, or should I do it?
I want you to do this one.
So I've been doing stellate ganglion block, the new version DSR, since 2006 for PTSD. Basically, we've been treating a lot of people. And then I ran into a young lady who was a psychologist, and her specialty was suicide in the Marines. And she sent me a bunch of patients, and they had really good results. And she said, I have this good friend, Jamie, who helped me with my book, and I think he needs this treatment. So he came to see me, and, you know, we got along, and I treated him, and afterwards, I found him very engaging, and I said, let's go out to dinner. Let's see, you know, let's just go chat, because we had a personal connection through a mutual friend. And that's how we got together. And, you know, we had our talk, I think it was about 3 hours, right, in that Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, he's playing the story down a little bit. I mean, in 20 years, how often have you asked a patient out to dinner? Okay, so it was an unusual situation.
Right.
But basically, I came across, I had a series, you know, I started to get kind of into the success lane that I wanted to be in 7 or 8 years ago. And I was motivated largely by overcoming things in life. I had a lot of childhood trauma, an unbelievable, probably unconquerable amount of childhood trauma. And I was driven by, you know, I was driven by education and to get away from poverty. And, you know, I had some accomplishments along the way, but about, you know, seven or eight years ago, when I started to really get where I wanted to be, the discomfort that was driving me, the more I got there, I was feeling it more. And it was disturbing me, because I was not a person that, even though I'd been through this experience, I did not associate myself as having been traumatized. And where I grew up, you know, being a victim was the worst thing you could be. I would never associate with being victimized. So I went and saw a therapist for the first time. She, after 6 weeks, diagnosed me with complex post-traumatic stress, into which I laughed in her face, because I thought it was such a ridiculous diagnosis. And then the look in her eyes, like I just, you know, kicked her dog or something. She just looked so hurt and she said, you know, Jamie, have you been listening to the stories you've been telling me? And in that moment, my kind of life narrative fell apart. I kind of started just hugging the cactus and being truthful with myself that I had been victimized, that I did have all sorts of symptomatic problems from trauma. When you're traumatized, you feel a certain way all the time. You think that's you. So you might not even know that you have trauma. So I started looking at solutions. I'd become friends with a really well-known forensic psychiatrist who was a fan of my work, who was kind of, I heard about this thing called the SGB, and I asked him to vet it for me. And he's probably one of the most bona fide. He works for Amen Clinic. He runs their Encino. Dr. John Faber, he runs their Encino office. He was a fan of my artwork. And he said, he vetted this thing for me. So in the middle of COVID, about 2.5 years ago, it was like Vanilla Sky. I got on planes with no people on it, and I went and did this kind of thing that I felt was very sci-fi and kind of scared me. to when I went to go do it. And then, but once I had an understanding, and then I did it, and it was the most transformative thing I've ever done in my life.
Jamie, I want to pause you and actually ask you to expand on this, because I don't think a lot of people listening quite yet know what a stellate ganglion block is, but with no medical jargon, explain to me what procedure you had done. You probably got injected something into your neck, I'm guessing.
Okay, but I'll back it up 3 feet and then answer that question. The first thing you have to understand before I answer that question is post-traumatic stress disorder does not exist. Trauma is 100% a biological injury, and you can see it on a brain scan. Okay. So when we have a traumatic event, we almost crash our car into someone, we get heightened, or we almost slip on a mountain. Okay. We get all heightened. Our amygdala sends a signal from our brain to these ganglion nerves on our neck, on each side of our neck, called the stellate ganglion. It's also known as the sympathetic nervous system. Okay. Well, typically after a near-death experience or a traumatic event, we come down a few hours later, we come back to baseline. However, if that traumatic event is too great, as in war, you see your buddy killed in front of you, or a sexual assault, and it's just too overwhelming, the sympathetic nervous system actually stays stuck in fight or flight. And then telling your brain 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year on a spectrum that you're being chased by a tiger and you could die. The bigger culprit, so that's A, caused by blunt force trauma, but what causes it even more is a more common thing where people don't even associate with trauma, and it actually has a massive effect on one's health and fitness, and that is prolonged allostatic load. If we carry stress for too long, if we carry stress load for too long, then our system's heightened all the time. It never comes, and then it gets stuck and it can't come back down. You can't out yoga it. You can't out breathe it. You can't do equine therapy. You can't psilocybin it. You can't out cannabis it. You can't alcohol it. It's like setting a broken leg. You really have to get the reset. And all these other incredible modalities out there, you have to get this reset if you want to feel normal again. Otherwise, you're just mitigating it. Okay. So the question is, what is it? What is it is you have this gang, you have this, your sympathetic nervous system is located in your neck. And the Dr. Lipov, who's the inventor of this procedure that I think is a Nobel Prize winning procedure and the most important medical innovation since the discovery of penicillin in 1928, when people really understand what it is. He basically takes the same $2 amount of anesthetic that goes into an epidural and turns off these nerves in your neck. He just powers them down with local anesthetic. He uses an ultrasound to guide it. The original shot was established in 1926 for tingling hands, and he's modified it. So we know that it's safe. It's no longer SGB. Dr. Lipov has modified it into what we call DSR, dual sympathetic reset. And so basically he turns these nerves off. 10 minutes later, they come back online at baseline. It's like rebooting a computer. So you could take a Vietnam veteran, and Eugene's done this, guy that's been carrying PTSD for 50 years. He turns the nerves off on the right side of the neck, and then the next day, the left side of the neck. And the right side is normally adult trauma. Left side before puberty is childhood trauma. You can only do one dual injection per day. And that guy will start experiencing emotion. He's at the pre-trauma state, or she's at the pre-trauma state. So it's a very simple thing, but when you think about us as an evolutionary species, it makes total sense. You know, if we're running from, you know, if we all as human beings reacted differently to trauma, we wouldn't survive. So there's about 7 or 8 symptoms that we can talk about later in the, you know, whenever you want.
That, and maybe I can give some more.
That's my layman's side, Dr. Lipov. So yeah.
Okay, so basically, let's talk about what PTSD or what the term.
I'll just continue. He'll come back. I'll continue with what he was going to say. But basically, there was a guy in 1970. There's a famous psychiatrist that's a close friend of Gene's named Dr. Frank Ockberg. And he's famous for coining the term, defining the term Stockholm Syndrome for the FBI. He also, in 2012, with a couple of other doctors, I think a guy named Jonathan Shea, and maybe it's just the two of them, decided to start pushing to change the name from PTSD to PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury. Okay. So it's a very fascinating thing, and I can kind of explain the science behind it pretty well. But it's kind of, you kind of have to look at it like, what would happen if you were running from a tiger? Peter Levine's work from the 19, I think he was writing, you know, the 80s and 90s, you know. Okay, he's back. I was telling them about Frank.
Okay, I appreciate it. Anyway, so back to the medical stuff. Okay, so what PTSI is, if you think about it, something bad happens, something really bad happens, or multiple small things happen, a part of the brain produces norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is transmitted in the brain that gives people sympathetic overactivation. So if you jump in front of the bus and you have to jump back, then the heart races and you have a lot of symptoms, hypervigilance, and all of those things. That's because norepinephrine is increased. So if you take fluid around the brain in somebody's PTSD, their norepinephrine level is increased. In fact, it's twice as high. So, but most of the time it goes away, right? But what happens if it's overwhelming? Then it produces secretion of NGF, which is nerve growth factor, called neurotropin. And that molecule gets transported from the brain to the neck, which is a ganglia where fight and flight nerves sit or sympathetic nerve combine. Once it hits the ganglia, it produces sprouting, which is sympathetic nerve increase number of sympathetic nerves. So let's say there are four to start with. After the injury, now there's eight. So each one of them produces norepinephrine. So as long as that pertains, people will have symptoms of PTSD, PTSI. So it turns out when you put local anesthetic on, and what I use is bupivacaine. Bupivacaine has been around since the 70s. It's been used in women for childbirth. You know, it's a safe drug. It's been around forever. So when we numb up the ganglia in the neck, it does two things. The first thing happens immediately. Norepinephrine level plummet. Once it stops secreting it, the level of norepinephrine reduces in about 5 to 10 minutes. So people can feel marked improvement immediately, which is pretty impressive to see, actually. But the other thing that happens is you reduce NGF level. NGF is required, nerve growth factor, is required to maintain the sprouting. So if the sprouting is dependent on NGF, if you reduce NGF, the sprouting goes away. So the local anesthetic can restructure the sympathetic nerves in the brain, and thus a block that lasts 8 hours clinically can last for years, which is pretty amazing to see. So that's the kind of the biology of it.
Yeah. So I want to make sure I understand is when the sprouting happens secondary to the overwhelming traumatic event, and we start to have an increase in actually the change of the tissue in the neck, the sympathetic chain gets more robust. There's more neuronal connections. There's more norepinephrine when we block this.
I'm sorry if I interrupted. Not sympathetic tissue in the neck. Sympathetic nerves originate in the neck and go up to the brain. When I'm talking about sprouting, I'm talking about the brain, not the neck.
Understood. Okay, so these are changes actually that are happening in the brain. So when we block in the neck, then we have changes that happen in the brain in areas like the amygdala and other areas that are being affected by adrenaline.
120%. Norepinephrine, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. And so how did you stumble upon this? Like, how do you get started on your routine during nerve blocks your whole career with all different kinds of things? But like, did you just notice doing those that people got less panic attacks? Or like, how did you stumble upon this?
No, here's where it came from. Actually, I was able to predict it, which was pretty snazzy, I think. So the way I got into a whole new utilization of SGB. So the first time I personally did SGB was 1987. So I've been doing it for years with CRPS, which is burning of the hand. So I had a patient that came in. She had neck problems. I fixed the neck problems, and she had severe hot flashes. I sent her to my brother, who's a primary care doctor, and I said, fix the hot flashes. I didn't do hot flashes. So he said, well, he tried everything. Nothing worked. He said, well, you know, you treat hot flashes, not hot flashes, burning of the hand, with stellate. Why don't you do it for the burning everywhere? I was like, I don't think that's true. He said, try it. So we tried it and it worked really well. So I published on that. It worked well. But I had the newspaper people came in to write an article about me. They came in and they're very aggressive. They said, yes, it works, but you shouldn't be doing it because you don't know the mechanism. Why does it work? What's the mechanism?
The Chicago Tribune, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. And then, so what that led me to do is read everything I could find about alternative uses of SGB or sympathetic blocks. So I came a paper from Finland in 1998, and where they were doing T2 clipping. Basically, you take a trocar, put it in the chest, move the lung out of the way, and then put a clip, which is a metal clip, on a fight and flight nerves or sympathetic ganglia for hand sweats. And they found that it went away, the hand sweats went away, but also PTSD went away. So I reviewed the anatomy of that. Turns out sympathetic nerves from the chest go up to the neck and go up to the brain. So then I called up my brother and I said, I think I can help people with PTSD. Let's numb up the nerves in the neck and see if it takes the way. So he sent me, the first patient we treated was somebody who was robbed at gunpoint. 2 months later, he was being admitted to a psych ward. So he came in, we treated him, he did well, and that led to the first publication.
Nice. And how'd you figure out that you needed to do both sides in sequence on two different days? Obviously, this has gotten refined over time. That seems like an interesting feature.
Yeah, so, well, there are two things. First of all, the regional stellate is a single level. So I had a patient who was a Marine sniper. And I treated his back pain. Anyway, he came in, severe PTSD, extremely severe PTSD. So he talked me into treating him.
I can finish the story. But basically, he was using the single injection, even at Fort Bragg. One of the reasons we wrote this book is to bring it to the masses, people that don't associate with trauma, and also to make sure that the modern protocols are being used. When I first went to Fort Bragg for some other work several years ago, even Fort Bragg, WOMAC, the most advanced military hospital in the world, was doing it based off a paper from 10 years ago before we had the dual injection and before we had the right and left side. So what he first figured out is he had a patient that didn't get better after they used to just do lower C7 or C6. And he did lower C7 or C6 on this sniper. And he's like, I still feel horrible. So he really wanted to help this guy. The guy was about to go into a psych ward. So he went back in the room and he did the C3. And he found that, and then the guy, his PTSD went away, or his PTSI, his post-traumatic stress injury. It's a broken leg you can't see. And when you talk about it honestly as a physical injury, which it is, and you can see it on an fMRI, you take the stigma away. It's really horrible. Like, say you had a broken leg and everybody said, look, you're crazy. You have broken leg syndrome. It would make you crazy, right? So calling it a physical injury, which is what it is really important. So that's how he developed the dual. There was a doctor, there's another, a next Navy SEAL, Dr. Sean Mulvaney, who's in Annapolis, Maryland. And he was the one that had a similar experience where he tried to help a guy, did the dual injection, the guy didn't get better. So he thought, I'm going to try the left side. And now that they've been doing that, so it's really the modern, up until about 7 or 8 years ago, it was about 70% effective in the permanent relief of post-traumatic stress. With these two modifications and innovations of the right and left side and the dual injection, it's 85 to 90% effective. Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah. And I can, you know, and so that's what, you know, what I'm most interested in, like, this has been around for 20 years. The military is probably doing 15 to 20,000 of these a year. The second largest cohort getting it is probably, sexual assault victims, right? How I came about seeing this work is I got invited to Fort Bragg to speak on my other work. Okay, by two special forces colonels that run all the training for special forces. And they found, you know, the doctor, when he and I had become friends, I'd gotten the treatment, it had kind of transformed my life. I was comfortable in my body for the first time in my life. You know, I had gone through a lot of parental abandonment. I'd grown up in and out of institutions. I had, carried allostatic load in very deep ways. And that had come into my adult life. And, you know, when you carry trauma all the time, you'll create trauma, right? So, as I got closer to this meeting, he knew they were doing his procedure at WOMAC. They wouldn't really talk to him. When I explained to the colonels, I said, hey, do you guys know this thing? They'd never heard of it, but they wanted me to come speak, and they were, I was coming as their guest. So they said, we'll check it out for you. And then it kept expanding out where it was like, okay, you know, the doctor that invented that, well, we're doing 10 of those a day, 6 days a week here. And then it turned into, well, the doc wants to come and sit in the audience. Oh, yeah, you can bring whoever you want. And then it came, well, hey, you guys want to do some post-traumatic stress meetings while you're here. Why don't you guys stay an extra week and we'll show you around. So then he and I went together, and then it was only 6 weeks away. Normally to get grand rounds at ROMAC takes 7 months to a year. Those colonels had a lot of influence. Colonel Paul Tulin and Lieutenant Colonel Paul Tulin and Colonel Stuart Ferris, they ended up arranging grand rounds at WOMAC for Eugene. So we just kind of went on this kind of post-traumatic stress tour. And one day I was doing a 3-hour meeting of people that had received, DSR, but the old way. So it's not as efficacious. It doesn't last. There's all sorts of issues. It doesn't last as long. Often it's got problems. Okay. So when I went through this 2.5-hour meeting where I'd listened to some of the most traumatic stories that I'd ever heard. And I was really frustrated because all of these guys were telling me that they'd been, they're coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. They're special forces and they're all being told they're crazy. And that's affecting their wives. It's affecting their kids. And I was really angry at the end of that meeting. I felt like the guy that was running that meeting, Jeff Dardia, on the Health Initiatives Task Force for Fort Bragg, I kind of got the idea that he thought I was some sort of artsy guy. He didn't get me. And I basically said to him, at the end of the meeting, he said, "Do you want to say anything?" Right. And I said, "Yeah, I do." And he said, "What? And can I swear on this podcast?"
Yeah.
Okay. Ahead. I basically just said, I said, "None of you guys have a disorder. None of you are crazy. You all have a physical, fucking injury to your body. And it's disgusting that you would go through what you go through as special forces fighters and being called back and being diagnosed with a pathology you don't have when you have a physical injury to your body that can be fixed in Chicago in 2 days. I partnered with Daniel Amen, so he provided brain scans. I did spec scans. A few months later, a private jet company donated a jet to fly 13 Special Forces officers, fighters, my cohort, to Chicago to get the treatment. And that's kind of how all this started. But after that meeting that day, Anthony or Dr. Yeah. Balduzzi?
I don't know.
Okay, Anthony. After that meeting that day, Jeff Dardia, I think he respected me for telling the truth. And then he said, "Come over here." And he said, "Do you know what operator syndrome is?" I said, "I have no idea." And then he kind of held up his phone and there was eight or nine symptoms that you would have if you were running from a tiger, which is basically what PTSI is, okay? Post-traumatic stress injury. And he said, and my mouth fell open because when I saw those symptoms, which we can get into, I didn't see soldiers. I saw the neighborhoods where I grew up. I grew up in Mexican immigrants in slums in Los Angeles. So I saw hardworking Mexican people with the weight of poverty and the weight of struggling through life. And then, my own life experience and the kids I grew up with. And that's where I saw those. I saw my neighborhood. I didn't see the military. So I got curious. That's what got my mind racing because this thing is out there. It's been featured on Rogan. It's been 60 Minutes, CBS This Morning, Wired. It's been out there, but it's always associated with the extreme. Green Berets, 9/11 first responder, sexual assault victim. So my curiosity was the other way you get this, which is the more common way, when the data comes out, we'll see that, is prolonged allostatic load. You can get prolonged allostatic load, which is chronic stress, from distant parents surviving COVID, your father or mother needling you, not getting touched enough as a baby, bullying. So I think that upwards of 40 to 50% of the U.S. and global population have an overactive sympathetic nervous system, and they're doing all sorts of things to mitigate against it, from yoga to psilocybin. And some of these things are good and really positive modalities, but cannabis, THC, ravages the brain. Alcohol ravages the brain, right? So there's pretty much, I'm really interested in bringing this thing away from the extreme and into regular people. Like, you help people with fitness and health, right? When you have an overactive sympathetic nervous system, and I can somewhat loosely explain the science behind this, that discombobulates your immune system. It completely throws off the scavenger system in your body. So we're going to find that this system is the culprit behind a lot of autoimmune disease, maybe the majority of autoimmune disease and cancer.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if the body keeps the score, right, who's the scorekeeper?
Yeah, the nervous system.
The nervous system. And now it can be reset for everyone. So, you know, I'm interested in the military. I also, 2 years ago, I went, a year and a half to 2 years ago, I went into a jail and interviewed murderers that committed an impulse crime 30 years ago. Because the system, like, it basically tells you you're under threat and you're about to die. So if you grew up in the neighborhood where I grew up in, where life is cheap, you can get to argument over somebody over a cheeseburger. But this, and the system is telling you that this is a life or death situation, when yeah. really it's just a cheeseburger, right?
Yeah.
So I went into a prison and interviewed murderers because I wanted to see if they would have the exact same 7 or 8 symptoms as somebody coming back from war. And they did. And yeah. that, and then I went, but I thought, God, as an artist, what I could do with a film or a book, because we're making a film as well, with war and crime juxtaposed, what I could do sonically and what I could do visually. But that's only 2% of the population, military and incarcerated. What I'm interested in is the other 40% of 50% of the U.S. population that doesn't think they had trauma, that has the core symptoms. And I'd be happy to get into what those core symptoms are if you want. But for what you do, Anthony, this goes far beyond health. It's physical health. It's preventing disease. But if you have an overactive sympathetic nervous system, what are the cortisol levels in your body going to be?
Right.
How's your endocrine system and other hormones? How are those systems in your body going to be operating and running?
I mean, it certainly affects everything. So in your vision for the future and taking this protocol out, like, what would it be? People would, let's just say 50% of people need this. And yeah. It could be more, right?
Yeah.
Like, would this just be a regular thing that people would get once or twice a year? They would get a reset nervous system? Or like, what would it look like when you're using your artist's mind to see the vision of what the future could be like, of how this interfaces with culture, society, and commonplace medical practice?
Well, I'll tell you a story of how I got Daniel Amen to partner with me, because I think that's a good example. And you know who Amen is, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And, you know, there was this doctor, this forensic psychiatrist, and Amen and this doctor would not like that I say this about them, but they really try to avoid giving people drugs. Daniel would mm-hmm. say, and this forensic psychiatrist, who's probably the most bona fide forensic psychiatrist in the world, Dr. John J. Faber, who runs the Encino Clinic for Amen. He was a fan of some of my other work. I met him because he emailed me and said, hey, can we talk? I'm a fan of your work. I'd like to fly you to LA to speak to inner city kids. And then we ended up talking and we ended up becoming friends. And then he said, you and Daniel have to talk. And so he, after I, first he vetted this thing for me, because it was him that vetted this for me that made me feel safe to go to Chicago during COVID. Yes. And then I got so much out of it, I started working on it. He saw me working on it and said, why don't you and Daniel have a conversation? He put us on Zoom. I started talking to Daniel Amen about it in an hour and a half Zoom call. He'd never heard of it. I felt like all he wanted to do, Anthony, was get off the call. He didn't know who I was. Like, why am I talking to this guy? So I just asked him questions and said, you know, why is something that's been around like this for 20 years or somebody like you who's been scanning brains and has proved that, you know, a lot of trauma is biological. Why are you only now being accepted? Why were you kind of put to the fringe for 20 years? And he said, yeah, no, you're good. Your audio's back. So, and he said, medical innovation, he showed me a quote. He screenshot a quote by Max Planck, medical innovation from 1940s, a Nobel laureate in physics. He said, Max Planck said, medical innovation is one in funerals. Okay. And then I said, Daniel, I just need you to look at this thing. If you tell me it's not true, or you tell me there's something wrong with it, then I'll listen to you. But if this is true, if Dr. Lipov's innovation is what we think it is, you should be part of it, because you've been the spearheader of mental illness doesn't exist. It's biology. Okay. And so he said, hold on. He started to look. This is an hour into the call. And in his mouth, he kind of fell open and he went, huh. And I said, what? He said, there's a very credible study here that says that Dr. Lipov's work is 70% effective in the permanent relief, or, you know, of the most extreme symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Okay. And I said, oh, that's an old paper. It's got to be 10 years old. With the latest modifications and innovations, it's 85 to 90. Daniel Amen looks at me in the Zoom and says, Jamie, you don't understand. At 70%, this is Nobel Prize winning work. I'll help you. Okay. So for me, what I see is, and you know, this will go to your kind of story of how it exists in the masses, and then we can turn it over to Dr. Lipov, is I overcame, I was semi-literate until my late teens. And I overcame a kind of poverty and a kind of a physical oppression and degradation that very few people could understand. And I went from being semi-literate at 19. I could read at a very high level, but in other areas of all expression, I was semi-literate. I felt like I was living in some sort of deprivation chamber of my own mind. I could read, but I couldn't express. Okay. I got an opportunity to turn my life around. I took it. And in 5 years, I went from doing remedial classes at a community college to graduating from the London School of Economics. Often people will say, what drove you to do that? What drove me to do that was to get away from illiteracy. So I thought education means no more. I thought literacy, the opposite of illiteracy and the opposite of poverty, which would be affluence and literacy, meant no more pain. And so I did this incredible thing and I ended up at the school with, you know, people that struggle their whole lives and they can't get in there. And all of a sudden I went from being with the poorest people in the world to being with the richest, most privileged people in the world. And they had the same problems at worst. So what I thought was going to be my solution was nothing. They had the exact same, they had more crazies, but they didn't have the realistic problem right in front of their face. So this whole thing that drove me was not the answer when I got there. And it wasn't until 25 years later, when I did this on myself and I did this for Dr. Lipov, that I found what I was looking for. That the sympathetic nervous system cannot think. As Colonel Paul Tulin says, it's apathetic. Okay. It processes trauma from war, the same or the stress of potential war fighting if you're at a fire base in Afghanistan. It processes the allostatic load of war the same way it would process the allostatic load of divorce.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's when I went, oh, my, this goes what my contribution to Dr. Lipov's work is. He's the inventor here. Right. He's the genius. What I'm trying to do is to get him to go, hey, Dr. Eugene, this is incredible that we're doing this for the military community and first responders and sexual assault victims. But there's another 50%, half the U.S. global population needs this, and they don't associate with trauma. They're not even looking for help. They're just uncomfortable in their bodies. They're not very nice to their wife. They're not very nice to their husband. They're reactive to their kids, and they don't know why. I'm trying to bring this away from the extreme. I want it to be more popular than LASIK.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this would be a procedure people would do, you know, once and then have lasting persistent effects because it, as Dr. Lipov was saying before, it changes the brain's structure, wiring connections, and kind of arrests part of this process of sympathetic overdrive.
It resets the sympathetic nervous system to the pre-trauma state.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Beautiful. And now, okay, so if people are listening to this right now and they're actually legitimately interested for themselves, for a loved one, for a friend, family member, would they have to fly to Chicago and go see you guys to get this kind of procedure?
Let me give you an answer. Well, fortunately, Jamie doesn't do any procedures. No, so I am a medical director for Stella Center. So you can see my beautiful shirt. Anyway, so we have sites in 34 locations in the United States. We have one in Israel and four in Australia. So if you go to stellacenter.com website, we have nurse practitioners who will talk to them and find out the correct candidates. There's psychiatric reasons to be the right candidate, the wrong candidate, as well as medical reasons. And then they would figure out who they would be treated by close to their home as much as possible.
And we have a new book, The Invisible Machine, which just came out a week and a half ago, which is in every bookstore in America, which explains this and breaks it down. Yeah. But nice. I will say this about Stella Center, where Dr. Lipov is the chief medical officer. He's teamed up 3.5 years ago with a private equity firm that's opening up clinics all over the world with the Stella Center protocols. If that didn't exist, I would have never gone on this journey with Dr. Lipov, because nobody would be able to get it the correct way. So if you decide this, if you read the book, or if you decide this is something that you want or a relative may need, A, you can give this book to a relative that doesn't think they have trauma and they will want the procedure. And after they read it, if they have the symptoms, okay, which we should get into before the end of this interview. But it was the availability with the correct protocols to actually get this correctly from the inventor. You can get this at 35 clinics around the country right now. That the availability is what made me think I have to do this. Somebody has to bring this to the world, or it's going to stay at the extreme for too long. And all these people are suffering for no reason.
I think what's interesting about this, just knowing some of my medical background, is it's pretty simple. I mean, it requires great skill and great intelligence to figure it out, but bupivacaine is pretty affordable and a physician's skill is very expensive to get there, but ultrasound guided injections, like, this can be trained, it can be scaled, it can get out there. And I just appreciate the simplicity and beauty of a lot of these solutions. And it's not like this is a $10 million crazy laser. This is like anesthetic interfacing with the nervous system. And it seems pretty accessible for people.
A big part of my day is spent on making sure people are correctly trained and the safety protocols are in place. But you're right. When I gave testimony in front of Congress in 2010, I said, compared to current therapeutics being or looked at, this is not going to grow any tails. We understand exactly what happens when with local anesthetic next to nerve tissue.
And also, to your point, because of it's a simple, inexpensive anesthetic, the pharmaceutical companies are never going to be able to make a ton of money off of it. Okay. You also don't need the dependency on so many other therapies or drugs after it. Right. Yeah. So and there's not really a downside, meaning because the shot's been around since 1926 and it's the ultrasound guided, it's safe and it takes about 10 minutes. But my biggest fear about writing this book is that, people would get it and then every pain clinic in America would be offering this for $500 and not, doing it correctly. And then it would, that the half doing it or doing it incorrectly would splash over onto, Dr. Lipov. So if you're not going and getting this at the Stella Center with all, you're not getting this, right? So, I would just tell, you have to go get DSR. The innovations have been so great. We no longer call it SGB. We now call it the dual sympathetic reset. And that's only available at, the Stella Center. And it is the only, if without the existence of the Stella Center, and I'm not trying to do a commercial for them, they don't pay me, I'm not connected to them. But if that organization did not exist, that institution, I wouldn't have gone near it, because there has to be a consistent place for people to go get relief with a consistent outcome.
So, Dr. Lipov, a patient comes into your clinic. Maybe give us some clinical vignettes here while we have you.
Sure.
Like a couple different things. Maybe an intense green beret, Navy SEAL type case, and maybe just an everyday person who maybe has more family based trauma. I'd love for you to share a couple stories about what people can kind of expect, how this pairs with therapy, what the prognosis is. You know, just all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I did 5 green berets today, so I would
really.
So basically, since we talked about how quickly norepinephrine level drop, the effect could be amazing. So typically people come in and, you know, green berets are very controlled, right? They're very strong, very amazingly mentally hardy. But after the block, a lot of times they start smiling. They have a broad smile. One of them, in fact, called me later and he said, you know, I have a big complication following this procedure. I said, what is it? My jaws hurt from smiling, which is pretty cute. So they feel really relaxed. You can see the shoulders go down and they can take a deep breath for 7 years, because when you're so stressed, that's what happens. A lot of times also, like, the immediate effect that we see, it doesn't happen to everybody. At least 50% of people feel that immediately. Sometimes there's a delay. And then my favorite example of all military, at least, was a guy who was involved in Tet's offensive in Vietnam. So we did a procedure on him. I think he was 74 when I treated him. So we treat him. He comes out in the recovery room, and he starts crying for half an hour. I was like, I've never seen that before. And I thought, my God, what did I do to this poor older gentleman? So he stops crying. He said, I feel amazing. I have not felt an emotion for 50 years, and now I have access to my emotions, which I think that's amazing. Because if you think about it, there are two types of memory. There is intrinsic and extrinsic. There is hippocampus, which is like regular memory.
Yeah.
And then there is emotional memory. But that's
right.
So when the emotional memory is too much, you can shut down, and this can actually bring it back.
Right.
I also wrote a chapter about sexual dysfunction reversal by doing this. Turns out up to 85% of men with PTSD actually have, or PTSI, have sexual dysfunction. So if you look at, there is a really interesting U-curve, at least being a scientific kind of geeky guy that I am. Low norepinephrine level, no sexual function. Optimal, maximal function. Too much, no function. If you're running from tiger, you don't want it sticking out, which makes tremendous sense. So, I mean, some of those vignettes, and I've had some people, like, you know, Jamie was talking about sexual dysfunction people. A lot of times people had a sexual attack, especially women. They cannot be held. So after the block, you know, after DSR, we get letters saying that, you know, I can be held, I can be intimate with my husband, I can be relaxed first time in years. Because, you know, being a duck, I'm sure you know about vaginismus and all that stuff. And it's all signs of guarding. You know, people come in, especially many women come in, their shoulders by the ears, and you see them recovering. I said, you know, the block is working. So, yeah, how can you tell? I said, well, first of all, you're smiling. Second of all, your shoulders are not by your ears anymore. And you can actually see this physiological change, which is really cool.
Have you tracked any of that stuff with heart rate variability? I think there's a lot of people wearing all these Oura rings and different kinds of things now. And I imagine, well, the autonomic nervous system has a huge part to play in cardiac function, rhythms, and electrical activity. So, like, how does HRV change with this type of procedure? So
I have been trying to document it. We are working on it. I'm sure HRV basically represents vagal tone. So too much sympathetics is going to knock out vagal tone. So I think it will be. And the other part, what we have already seen is sleep improvement, significant sleep improvement. There have been a number of studies showing that that can do that. What's interesting is that if you think about it, you may sleep for the same number of hours, but you don't have the deep sleep. You have poisons from the brain coming out. So this seemed to move people into the deeper sleep cycle, which is much healthier than being in the first stage one and two.
To comment on the symptoms, I think it's a good place to talk about the symptoms, the seven or, you know, the eight or nine symptoms that I keep talking about that are the biological symptoms of being stuck in fire flight, if you're interested, or if this is a good time, Anthony.
For sure.
First of all, you know, I will say again, the second largest cohort getting us outside of the military is sexual assault victims. So because they're looking for some solution, so they find it. Okay. Again, you know, I believe that it's much broader than that, because I think the majority of people that are getting this is from allostatic load, chronic stress. You know, if you look at Gabor Bate's new book, The Myth of Normal, it's all about how we live in a society that's creating chronic stress on everyone, right?
Yeah, and then we normalize it.
Yeah, and then we, you know, from digital, we're not designed to live in artificial environments, to only interact with artificial or digital communication. All of these things stress the nervous system, and over time, right? And people have different sensitivities as to what's going to lock their nervous system into fight or flight. And a lot of times when you see people doing modalities, like they're obsessed with doing yoga or they're obsessed with running, you'll find that some people love yoga and some people love running, but you'll find a lot of yoga instructors, a lot of runners, a lot of people that are doing what they're mitigating against their sympathetic every day.
Yeah.
Right. Listen, go do yoga and go run because you love it. And do it in a solar way. Don't do it because you have to be normal every day when you can just go get a dual sympathetic reset. We explain how this works for the every person in the book. So when we look at the seven or eight symptoms, what you're really looking at is how you would feel if you were running from a tiger, right? So this is a biological system. We all have to have an identical response to a tiger attacking us, okay? And that response we need to get away from the tiger. We need to run, flight, or we need to kill the tiger. So we're either going to, so the basic, we need to fight or flight. That system is in your neck and it talks to the brain. And when we block the neck, the brain goes back to normal. And you can see that de-escalation of activity in the amygdala on a functional MRI. Okay. But so what are those symptoms if a tiger was chasing you? They would have to be identical or you would never survive the tiger. Those symptoms are anxiety. You would have anxiety about the tiger. You would have mild paranoia that the tiger was going to be there at any second and jump at you. You would have a chronic sense of doom where the other shoe was going to drop, that the tiger was about to eat you. You would be hypervigilant about the tiger. You would be hyper-aroused about the tiger. You wouldn't be able to sleep if a tiger was chasing you. You would be reactive and have a hair trigger. without, if the tiger was chasing you, you would have erectile dysfunction because you can't have sex if a tiger is chasing you. And ultimately in the military where people are trained to protect, ultimate flight is suicide. And in the neighborhoods where I grew up, where life is cheap or violence is acceptable, ultimate fight is homicide or violent behavior. So that is kind of on a spectrum in all of us if we have an overactive sympathetic system. And and all of those things, it's kind of an amazing thing. You know, what Dr. Lipov described with this Vietnam vet and how he felt after he did the procedure, that's how I felt after I did the left side. Like I could feel emotion again. It was staggering to me, like watching a movie and feeling myself feel the movie in a way that I hadn't since maybe I was a little kid, or walking down the street and I used to, and seeing people that I would normally judge as like, hey, they didn't get out of the neighborhood. They're people that, you know, they couldn't do what I did. And now when I see people struggling, I see an addict or I see somebody struggling with anything, I just see somebody trying to regulate their nervous system.
Yeah.
I don't see pathology anymore. I only see biology. And that's thanks to Dr. Lipov.
And that's amazing too, a really strong point you make, Jamie, that our perceptions are rooted in the tone of our nervous system, whether we're experiencing compassion or judgment, even so, is largely rooted in whether we're dominantly sympathetic or parasympathetic. It's very clear from this conversation that we have a strong protocol here to reset the nervous system. And it also is very evident to me that we have a culture that continues to push and propagate the large allostatic load. I'm thinking about today's kids even. You know, we have a culture in the West of high performance, high achievement, lots of pressure. I mean, there's people freaking out about getting into certain colleges. Parents are pushing them hard in sports. Is this something that you both envision could be useful for young kids? Because we're not going to change culture overnight. You know, that takes some time. What's the youngest that people can get this procedure? And would it be valuable for young people in high school, let's just say?
Yeah, let me give you an answer to that. So as an academic anesthesiologist, I've done 2 3-year-old stellates for CRPS. The youngest I ever did for PTSD is about 8. We typically cut off at 11 or 12. I did my kid when he was 11, and it helped him a lot. It's not done for routine things. Right. I mean, my son had a lot of adoption trauma and things like that. But overall, when somebody's really struggling with anxiety, depression, you know, those kind of things, I think that's valuable. And especially, you know, one of the things that people don't think about is you can catch PTSD in the family. So my father had PTSD, he gave it to my mother and to me. So that's called secondary PTSD. So the kids can actually pick it up from their parents. So yes, if they have symptoms of PTSD or PTSI, absolutely, I think it's valuable in children. Now, would I do it because people couldn't get into college? That gets to be gray. But you know, if they're immobilized and they can't sleep and they're traumatized, absolutely. The other thing to think about is what we find is that after the DSR, psychological intervention is much more effective, because now they're not being overreactive. So the way I usually like to see it is when somebody has a malfunction, let's say a computer malfunctions, you do a software patch, but if the hardware is not working, it's not going to work. So this is fixing the hardware, and software can be done by psychology colleagues.
Yeah. In my vision, Anthony, if someone were struggling psychologically with anything, you would do this first. You know, you have to, like, before you doing physical therapy, because physical therapy works, reset the leg. And also the amount of progress that someone can make in 2 days, you would be able to make this much progress in 10 years of talk therapy in terms of, and so it gives that person the boost to have hope. They get so much gain with no downside in 1 or 2 days that it can push them through over the hump to get where they want to go.
And the ability to process their feelings and the emotions, right? Like you said, you can feel things more. And like when the only way to heal is to process and not suppress, you know, ultimately.
Yeah. Why are you doing talk therapy if you're doing it over the inability to connect with yourself? And, you know, again, what I really am proud of in this book that we've written together, we wrote it with this incredible collaborative writer named Holly Lawrence, who is a subject matter expert in not only post-traumatic stress, but false incarceration, is we really parse apart how this thing relates to all the other modalities out there. What is DSR and resetting the nervous system? How does that relate to EMDR? How does that relate to hyperbaric? How does that relate to ketamine? And how does that relate to psilocybin? We really parse that apart. And what we really do is we allow you as a regular person whose husband may be reactive, but he never had traumas. You know something's wrong, but you don't know what it is. We really, in the book, allow you to see that he has valid symptoms, or she, your wife has valid symptoms, and they can go get treated. So the book is a way to, you know, it's just beautifully expressed in the way that it kind of speaks to the every person, which is really what my goal was with the book. Because, you know, the military has been doing this for almost 20 years. They're the first adopters. Obama endorsed this thing maybe as early as 2008, right? So again, what I want to do is bring it to people like me that didn't think they had trauma. You know, as a woman, a wife of a friend of mine, a professor in Tennessee, she was just a, social worker and a housewife and a really just, you know, never associated herself with trauma, but she had a mother that needled her. I convinced her to go do this. She was reluctant, but she had IBS for the last 10 years, 38-year-old woman, maybe, mid to late 30s. She went and did this. Her IBS went away. And we see that all the time, every day. It's kind of, but when you, like you said earlier, Anthony, it's so simple. It makes so much sense once you see it. But one of the things that Dr. Lipov, Eugene Lipov, talks about is that it has a credulity problem. It's too simple, right? Like, you know, you do this thing, you take a shot in the neck and you're 80% better.
Right.
And so, I mean, for me, my vision is that this would be more common than Botox and LASIK combined. Yeah. For regular people that don't associate with trauma.
Well, I mean, this was, I think, a very powerful conversation we've had. And I think it's a wonderful segue into anyone who is interested to absolutely get your new book. I would say, I know it's in bookstores, but also it'd be great to get it on Amazon too, as well, to make sure that this book gets well spread across all the places where people buy books. And so can you speak into where you'd like to send people so they can learn more about this work, learn more about trauma and get the book?
Yeah. The book is The Invisible Machine, The Startling Truth About Trauma and the Scientific Breakthrough That Could Transform Your Life. We were talking about vagal tone earlier. Stephen Porges and Eugene and Dr. Lipov are very good friends. Stephen Porges is a huge endorser of the book and Dr. Lipov's work. So yeah, the book is available. All bookstores are sold. You can get it at every Barnes & Noble in America, and you can get it on Amazon. What I would recommend is to go to DrEugeneLipov.com. is an incredible resource. Another great resource is Stella. Is the Stella Center. So just Google Stella Center. I think it's stella.com. What is that?
It might be stellacenter.com.
Okay, stellacenter.com. So yeah, that to me is the obvious place where you can go and get this. Those are great resources. If you want to find something out outside of the book.
Right? Nice. Well, Jamie, I want to thank you and Dr. Lipov for being champions of this work, messengers, and for this so deeply transforming your life. I want to say congratulations on that front. And I think in particular, you are a very powerful messenger. I'm speaking to you specifically, Jamie, for this as like this bridge point between, you know, a tough upbringing, profound the experience with this healing, and also the amount that you do know medically. It's like you're an absolutely powerful messenger, and I'm excited for all the art and different depictions that you bring to this message and how this unfolds. And I'm grateful that at least in our communities, we got to play a small part in spreading this message, getting this info out to more people. And I know there's going to be at least a couple people listening to this who will be very curious to try this. And hopefully they have, there's a good 80 to 95% success rate that they'll have a good effect from this.
Yeah. The thing is that if I'm right about the numbers, Anthony, this is the last thing I'll say at this 50% level, there's not one person that is listening to us right now that isn't A, questioning if they have it, or know 20 people that they think have it. And the book does parse that apart for you. It's very easy to read. It's very narrative driven, and it's $10, right? So you can understand this in yourself and others. And normally I'm not somebody that, you know, when I am promoting something, the last thing I do is try to sell my book. I just care about the ideas. But in this case, I feel like the message is so compact and so potent, so science heavy, so narrative heavy, so easy to read that it can just solve a lot of confusion for people. So I do want them to go out and get it.
Yeah. And I think too, especially because from what this conversation was, and I'll wrap with this, is that someone's going to walk away from that book, regardless if they actually end up getting the dual sympathetic reset protocol, understanding their nervous system and the trauma relationship to that in a much deeper level. And like, that's massively valuable. That changes your whole worldview and your body's view. And it's just the truth. We are nervous electric beings. And
can I just react to that?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. I mean, somebody, you know, people ask me, you know, what is the one thing you want people to walk away with? One is, and there's two. One is that it's for everybody. It's not for the extremes. Bring it to the every person. But the main thing I want, if all people walk away from this book thinking is they understand when they're done reading it, is that trauma is biological. That's going to change the way that they look at themselves and people, then I did my job. If all we did our job, if that's all they get out of it. And I just want to thank you, Anthony, for really a beautiful conversation. I don't know if it's because you're a doctor and you want of natural medicine or something, but I feel like there was a real, you know, getting to the heart of it and an eloquence to the understanding of it that was unique. And I just really appreciate the conversation.
I received that, my brother. Okay. Thank you. I mean, I'm deep in this work myself. So I appreciate you guys for coming on, and I'm excited to spread this message.
Thank you. And then reach out if you need anything.
Will do. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Fit Father Project podcast. If you love what you heard, please rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts. It really helps spread this show to more men who need this valuable info. To watch full video episodes of this podcast and other motivational videos to inspire your training and more, visit our Fit Father Project YouTube channel. It's free and everything's made for busy guys over 40 like you. Visit youtube.com/FitFatherProject to get access to our entire video library. And finally, if you or someone in your life is interested in becoming a fit father or needs help losing weight, building muscle, and living healthier after age 40, then visit fitfatherproject.com, where you can see our proven programs, supplement line for guys 40 plus, and free meal plan and workouts to get you started. This is Dr. Anthony Balduzzi signing off. I'll see you in the next episode.